Inside Chicago Government. ChiGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and he's here in the house. What's up?
Hello, Senator. I've been unfairly accused of not calling you Senator anymore. I'm now going to call you Senator.
Today, we're not talking about the Senate. We're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on October 9th, 2014, titled, In Chicago Public Schools Classrooms, 36 is a Crowd. You write about the challenges due to overcrowding faced by teachers at Oriel Park Elementary School.
Go Panthers.
A Chicago Public Schools, or CPS, neighborhood school of about 700 students in the northwest corner of the city near Harlem and Bryn Mawr.
That is correct, Senator.
In this article, you write, quote, CPS magically discovered the money to pay for an additional fifth grade teacher for Oriel Park to be hired before the end of the year, end quote. Do you know how that came about? Did CPS, for example, hear you were sniffing around the school or something?
I like to take credit for everything good that happens in the city of Chicago, whether or not I should get credit for it.
At least in the school system.
Yes, and anything. Potholes being filled.
That's right. You single-handedly get
I single-handedly. I'm not unlike Mayor Emanuel in that situation, except he has a greater press staff than I do, so I don't get to issue daily
press
releases.
You can still announce for mayor.
Yes, I can. Right. Yeah, except I wouldn't want to campaign. I just would run. And then have you run the city.
See, if nominated, you will not run. If elected, you will not serve.
Correct. Yeah. Anyways, back to suddenly discovering the money for a fifth grade teacher. This is kind of sort of how Mayor Rahm runs the public schools. If there's enough outcry that he feels that politically he has to address a problem at a school, in this case overcrowded, he will address it and there will be money for it. But he reserves the right not to address it. So there's a chronic funding crisis that prevents him from, in a systematic way, of addressing the many issues that we face as a city, educationally speaking. So there's both. We've discussed this. There's capital needs, which more classrooms or theater space or equipment or copy machine, et cetera, just basic capital expenditures. And then, of course, is the operational crisis where we need money to hire teachers and staffers. So what he does is very clever. He claims that there's a critical crisis in terms of funding that prevents him from addressing these needs. But it always seems when it's a politically sensitive issue, he's able to find the money to, like in this case, build an extension at Oriel Park. This has been going on for a while. It's been an overcrowded school for a while. So they found the money to build an extension. And the problem is, well, you're building this extension and won't be ready till next year. We have an immediate crisis in our school right now of overcrowdedness, particularly in the fifth grade level. They find the money for a fifth grade teacher. Now, there's no place to put the teacher.
Wait a minute. Where did they find the money to hire the teacher?
Where?
Yeah.
Under a plant in the central office. I mean.
So we don't know that.
Yeah, we don't. Nobody. Where did they find any of them? Where did they suddenly find the money to pave the streets? Winter officially ended, as far as I know, in March. We went through the entire spring and summer into the fall with our streets in horrible shape. Now, before the election, there's money to pave the streets. So my conclusion, and again, this is just my conclusion, is that the mayor has the money. He just is choosing not to spend it on things that people want.
You said that in the Oriel Park case, the extension that is being built, was there a particular squeaky wheel going on there that caused the school to become a beneficiary of the budget largesse?
Yes. Many schools on the Northwest Side, not just them, have been showing up at Capitol Board meetings where the Board of Education meets to has hearings on how they're going to spend their capital budget, which is building things, that part of the budget as opposed to the day-to-day operational. And so they made their feelings known. They've been working through their local alderman, Mary O'Connor, who's a close ally of Mayor Rahm. She's up for re-election, so of course, you know, she's going to need something to show her community, her constituents, that there's some merit to being the mayor's rubber stamp. And so one obvious thing is to say, look, my alliance with Mayor Rahm brought you this extension. So he will find the money to build the extension. So he's basically clutching the money, using it as a political tool to reward his friends. He's not spending in any systematic, wise manner. I applaud him for building the extension they clearly need. Well, actually, I'm not even sure about that. I mean, you got to take a look at boundary issues. If you were going to be sophisticated and do an analysis of the school needs on the Northwest side, you would take a look at all the joining schools. Which ones are underserved? Which ones are overserved? Is your way of adjusting boundaries?
And you could create a capital plan.
Yes, you could create something called a plan. God forbid we do that.
There is such a document.
Which nobody pays attention to. As opposed to a political plan, politically speaking, the all-powerful mayor hoards the money and then doles it out when it's to his advantage politically. And he doesn't always dole it out, as this article shows. He doesn't always dole it out in a systematic way that really helps kids. So in this case, they're doling out money to build an extension when you still have this critical overcrowding in the school. So then they hire a teacher to bring down the class size, but there's no classroom to put the teacher.
When I was looking into this article, I came across research from a website called Apples to Apples, and the researchers behind the site figured that as of the 2013-2014 school year, Chicago charter and contract schools had almost 11,000 unfilled seats. And I juxtapose that with the overcrowding in many parts of the system. Isn't that a remarkable imbalance?
Yes. The charter school movement is largely a political movement. Politically, its main purpose, of course, is to undercut the Chicago Teachers Union. I'm talking about on a local level here, not just national level, but on a local level, give more political power to the mayor. And he's been pretty effective at that in the last 4 years in terms of doling out money to charter schools, which takes the money away from public schools. So now here we are, as we're heading into his reelection campaign, he's realizing, and I'm sure his polls are showing, that public school parents are upset because their schools are experiencing cuts, operational cuts, because he's siphoned off so much money to charter schools when there's not a demand. He's effectively trying to transfer kids, use the power of the purse to move kids from public schools with union teachers to private schools that get public money and don't have union teachers. That's another thing he's done with this election season. I don't know if you noticed this, but the board did not approve any new charters for the coming year. So momentarily, we will halt that diversion of money that you just alluded to. But my guess is that once he's reelected, if he is reelected, then we'll see it happen again, because that seems to be his ultimate goal, is to move the system toward a charter, private, non-union setup, much the way he did with the janitors. Yeah, it's exceedingly unpopular with parents. So on election season, he momentarily halts it.
Perhaps a related move is that this year, CPS announced that it would implement student-based budgeting, otherwise known as SBB. In this scheme, CPS annually budgets an amount for each school based on the number of students attending, so that schools whose enrollment drops from the previous year will have their budgets cut, regardless of their other needs. In fact, this past summer, CPS disclosed the planned budgets for its schools in the coming academic year, and these budgets showed huge slashes in many schools that were already struggling, or in some cases had improved dramatically. The move related to what we were talking about is what CPS said last month, that it would rescind these slashes just for this school year. In a letter to the schools, CEO Barbara Bird Bennett wrote, quote, "Knowing that this first year of SBB will be one of change and adjustment for many schools, and after giving this decision careful thought and deliberation," Those that have fewer students than originally projected will not lose SBB funding at this time. We believe this will provide principals and staff with the opportunity to have the most successful transition possible during year one of SBB. As Amy Goodman would say, your response.
Well, if there's any person out there who actually believes that there's anything remotely sincere about that quote, you deserve the government that you're getting. And I got some land in Arizona.
It was Governor Adlai Stevenson who said that, didn't it?
Which part?
That people get the government that they deserve.
Did he say that?
I believe so.
I'm like conjuring Adlai Stevenson.
Yeah.
Do I have a hole in my shoe as well? What's my thought? My thought is that one of the phoniest budget-saving devices of recent time is this school-based budgeting that was promoted by the mayor, I guess. When did he unleash it? In the last couple of years? I can't remember. It was after the strike. His argument at the time, if you recall, was that he wanted to give principals a greater say in how they run their school, when in fact by doing this with this new budget, he undercut the say that they had. Because the way it works is that the budget effectively forces principals to fill teaching vacancies with the cheapest teacher they can find. Because in the old way of doing things, there would be teachers allocated to a school.
Regardless of what their price.
Regardless of their price. Now, money is allocated to a school based on enrollment. Well, if young teacher cost $50,000 and old teacher cost $80,000, then under the new system, the principal is encouraged to hire the cheap teacher, the $50,000 teacher, because you can only afford so much. So in the guise of giving principals more authority, they're actually giving them less authority. So it's pretty much like everything else in this town. They say A and they mean B.
But isn't it nice that they're giving them a year adjustment? I'm using air quotes when I say adjustment.
Well, I don't know if the word nice is the one I would use in anything regarding Chicago.
Use a three-syllable word?
Well, I think it's cynical. Nice. There's nothing nice about the city of Chicago except maybe this weather outside today. I think it's a pretty calculated, cynical move by the mayor who's running for re-election by trying to undo the reputation he had for the first 3 years or 3.5 years. He's now trying to forestall any kinds of serious cuts that would upset people until next year when it'll be back to business as usual. I don't see it as nice. I guess you could call it a reprieve, a temporary reprieve. And that's why I suggested in this column that we'd all be better off if we had election years every year with this mayor, and then he would govern the city according to what people want as opposed to whatever his political agenda is.
Imagine that environment. Perpetual election.
Perpetual elections. And maybe we can encourage some well-known politicians to run. Stop being so scared.
Ben Jaworski,
right.
At the beginning of October, CPS proposed to convert Hancock College Prep, a neighborhood high school near Midway Airport at 56th and Pulaski, to a selective enrollment school in the coming school year. If converted, CPS says Hancock would become the first selective enrollment high school on the southwest side. I'll point out, though, that Lindblom, a selective enrollment high school near Damon and 61st, is just 3 miles to the east, but it's in Englewood. The Hancock conversion is backed by the mayor, by State Representative Michael Madigan, in whose 22nd district Hancock resides, and 13th Ward Alderman Marty Quinn. If Hancock converts to selective enrollment, presumably most of the kids who live in its current, what they call catchment area, mm-hmm. would not be able to attend Hancock because it'll require testing to get into Hancock, and chances are at least half of the kids who live in the neighborhood wouldn't be able to go. And it's reportedly a decent school into which the government has invested heavily in recent years. Meanwhile, as the Sun-Times points out, nearby Gage Park High School is under-enrolled and has a lower performance rating than Hancock. So Gage Park might be a smarter choice to make the infusion of cash required to make it a selective enrollment school. Finally, if Hancock converts, CPS wants to send neighborhood kids to three other local high schools, which, as the Sun-Times reported, are currently overcrowded. This is coming back to where we started. Right. What's your take on all this?
I've not specifically written about this situation, although I intend to eventually. This gets at what I started off by saying, that there's no effective educational planning going on. It's all political planning. In this particular case, the case of the Southwest Side, the mayor was exposed for indifference on the issue of selective enrollment schools when he proposed the Obama High School on the north side. Remember that one, which I'm sure we discussed a few times.
We did.
Why would you put another selective enrollment school on the north side that's next to Peyton, an existing selective enrollment school, when there's areas of the city that are underserved? So obviously the mayor's internal political polls showed that this was an issue of contention. So in order to deal with it, he says, I know what I'll do. I'll take Hancock and make it a selective enrollment school. Then you have this ripple effect where you have these consequences on the other schools. So obviously nobody has paid any attention whatsoever to the educational impact of these decisions. These are all political decisions by a mayor who's running for re-election by trying to undo his first 3.5 years of policy. So to me, it's an example of the sort of underscores what we were talking about with Oriole Park. The further irony of all this is that the mayor says he doesn't want an elected school board because he doesn't want to politicize the schools. the schools are already politicized. And there's nothing not political about the way he runs schools. It's just all sort of like chess pieces in a larger political game that he's playing. I can only say that any Chicago public school parent who votes for Mayor Rahm has some serious delusional issues that he or she must confront. He has not been a friend to public education in Chicago, that's for certain.
This is turning into Ask Dr. Jourovsky.
Yes, I could give you counseling on that, okay?
Dear Dr. Ben, I'm considering voting for Mayor Rahm. Can you diagnose me?
I've had these discussions with Rahm supporters on the north side who are really happy that he gave money to their particular school to expand their school, and particularly Coonley Parents, which is a small school on the north side, which is, I forget how many millions of TIF dollars he's sunk in there to expand it, even though there's underutilized schools all around it, so you wouldn't even need to build the extension. And I just say to him, well, you know, this is not really a logical way to run a system, just to throw money at your school because you have political clout and goodwill with him, and then you don't have money to operate your school. And so really, you know, there's no logical reason for you to vote for Mayor Rahm. Yeah, but he gave money to my school. So they almost want me to say, okay, I approve. You can vote for him.
Self-interest.
You know, I absolve you.
Self-interest rules. You wouldn't even call it enlightened self-interest.
Yeah, it's not even enlightened self-interest. I don't even know what it is.
It's just self-interest.
It's self-interest. Yeah, it's not unenlightened self-interest. It's sort of like the Tribune endorsing Bruce Rauner for governor, even though they themselves, the Tribune, has been really the victim of some of the most horrendous capitalism run amok, you know, with Sam Zell.
Sam Zell, yeah.
But they're going to do this venture capitalist because he's good for what? Good for what? What are these guys good for?
They both ride motorcycles.
Yes.
Zell and Rauner.
Well, Zell rode a motorcycle. I mean, Rauner has been on a motorcycle.
That he gets transported via flatbed truck to the venue that he's riding in at.
That little piece of information Dave gleaned from this week's show at the Hideout, which was truly entertaining and enlightening on many levels, and it featured three great Chicago journalists, Big Danny Milopoulos from the Sun-Times, Natasha from the Sun-Times, and Charles Thomas from ABC TV.
Do you want to plug the next one?
The next one, thank you, will be on Election Day. So I urge everybody, after they voted, to show up at the Hideout.
That's November 4th, isn't it?
That is correct, Senator.
Tuesday, November 4th?
That is correct, Senator.
Making up for lost time.
I believe we will have our distinguished guests, aside from myself and the great McNumkey, we'll have State Rep Will Burns and the great Rick Kogan from the Tribune.
Who's got one of the best radio voices in Chicago, I believe.
He does.
He's got the gravel and cigarettes voice.
He will not be allowed to smoke while he's doing the show at the Hideout.
It won't affect the timbre of his voice.
No, so it should be a lot of fun.
I just wanted to close on circling back to the discussion about what goodies the mayor hands out in an election year. And it was Sun-Times education reporter Lauren Fitzpatrick said that this is the time to ask the mayor for things because of his reelection generosity. And we were speculating a month or two ago. I asked you when we were talking about the newly insurgent principals, Chicago Public School principals, what sorts of largesse might we expect to see from the mayor with respect to schools? And I think now perhaps we're seeing some of it.
Yeah, I can't remember what I said then, so I hope I don't contradict what I said then, which has been known to happen.
It was pretty wild, baseless speculation. Whatever it was. I don't remember exactly what it was either.
If you're going to be speculating, you should be wild and baseless, because, you know, go for it all. Like I said, you should have an election year every year because he'll actually pay attention to your needs. In terms of the janitors, they said they were going to lay off, 500? And then they ended up hiring back 250 of them.
That's like saying you're going to close 100 plus schools and then only closing 50.
Yeah. So I guess maybe there is some logic to his madness, but it's not a way to run a railroad. Did Adlai Stevenson say that? Who said that? Somebody said that.
Who backed railroads?
Abraham Lincoln. He funded the significant expansion of...
So maybe it was Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, this is no way... No, somebody said that in the 20th century.
And listeners, write in.
If you know.
Well, thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Senator.
Listeners, we welcome your questions, comments on who made that quote, and any suggestions for future interviews via Twitter, via Facebook. You can find us on the both of them, or as we say on the South Side, the both of them, by searching for Inside Chicago Government. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.